Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 10th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
Behind the board is our stupendous producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, stupendous. I like that.
Yeah. Somebody wrote that in for me.
That was me. Yeah. I was here to help.
Oh, thanks, Becky.
This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to make some sense of it all. And yesterday we closed the show with a rumor, and we said we'd get back to you on it. And so we are. The iPad 3G user email address leak is all over the news today.
It's huge. It was one of the first headlines I saw this morning. It's
right. 114,000 emails leaked, basically slurped off of the AT&T website by hackers who slurped. I love that word. Who used a very it seems like a straightforward hack.
It's a hack in the loosest sense of the world. Essentially,
it's like, there's a window.
Yeah, the iPad had a feature in it that allowed you to associate an ICC ID with your email address, mm-hmm. so that when you wanted to log into the AT&T website from the iPad, you didn't have to enter your email address again. You just put in your password. How handy is that?
They preloaded all of those website, all of those email addresses onto the AT&T site, and they were just sitting there waiting for the iPad with the associated ICC ID to come and match them up.
A group calling itself Goatsy Security revealed the flaw to Valleywag yesterday. That's where we got the story. And so all they did was a brute force attack where they tried a bunch of different ICC IDs until they got a return and then read out the email address. Came up with a bunch of important people's email addresses.
And that's the thing, is the 114,000 email addresses are not just anybody. It's some of the most important people in media, in the alpha testers.
Which raised a question in Dave's mind, and he sent us an Og Vorbis file with the question.
Hi, this is Dave from PA, Jekyll from the chat. I'm not an Apple apologist. I've never owned any sort of Apple product in my life. But what is the big deal about all these iPad emails that got leaked? Was John C. Dvorak on the list and suddenly in risk of receiving spam for the first time? I'd bet that at least half the emails are publicly available, and even the ones that aren't, so what? Am I missing something significant here about the device IDs that were also included, or is this just a whole lot of smoke? Thanks. Love the network, love the show, love the work you all do for new media.
Good question, Dave.
Well, for one thing, you have to think about the people whose names were exposed. We're talking about New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, Harvey Weinstein, film producer Diane Sawyer. These are heavy hitters. And so I think that it seemed sort of titillating, and I think that's one of the reasons why it became a huge news story, that these people's email addresses could have been made public. So that seemed like a newsworthy aspect of it in my mind.
Additionally, though, the just having an email address, I mean, that's going to increase the amount of spam that they potentially get having that email address out there. But the question is whether or not those people, I mean, there are people in NASA, in the government, I mean, there are people in positions that if they were able to get hacked based on their email address becoming available, there is potentially sensitive information that could be, released. So that's a sensitive issue.
I think it's overblown, because if I know Bob White works at NASA, I can guess it's bwhite@nasa.gov or bob@nasa.gov. You know, I can try a bunch of different ones. This doesn't tell me a whole lot, because most of these email addresses are guessable already.
Completely.
You know?
And I think that part of it, it's just email addresses. I think that was pretty minimal. There was a lot of speculation at first. The New York Times speculated via one of the security consultants that they interviewed that they could also have grabbed location data. But then they went on to say, but that would be if they could marry the ICC ID to databases that are not tied to AT&T's website. Well, no joke. I mean, it would be Christmas every day if you had the keys to Santa's house. You know, so that seemed like a kind of a dumb assertion. And then the other one was that Gizmodo said that they thought this could lead to SIM card cloning. But I haven't seen anything or anyone else corroborating that theory. That seems far-fetched as well, just because you have the ICC ID. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, and I'd love feedback from that if people want to send us that. But I don't know. Just email addresses? Meh.
I don't think the ICC ID is that valuable. I could be wrong, too. But from what I know, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I had to call AT&T at 2:30 in the morning when GMA said they wanted this story. And they issued this very standard statement saying that they've fixed the breach, that all the names are off of the website. They're sorry. They take privacy seriously. It won't happen again. Mea culpa, you know?
Yeah.
But the organization that did this, they weren't doing it maliciously. They were kind of opening.
It was a plea for attention.
It got them attention, but at the same time,
Goatsy Security, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it's a great name. Right. I love it. but they're putting it out there, publicizing it, and letting AT&T know that they had a problem, as opposed to
what they should have done is contact
addresses.
AT&T. What they did is they went to a bunch of press agencies.
They ignored them.
Forbes and Washington Post and the Chronicle. All those places turned them down. It wasn't until they got to Gawker that they actually got somebody to pick it up.
Yep.
They've said that they did go to AT&T. AT&T said that they didn't. Company said, but it does raise a good point. You know, I remember when I was doing security at Tech TV, it's really hard to figure out how to communicate with hackers in a formalized way. Like, is this just some wackadoo sending some information to us, or is this a real credible tip? I think media organizations don't have a clue on how to handle any of these kind of tips from groups that are called goatsy.
I don't have a clue why everyone's so upset about Google's new feature that allows you to put your own picture in the background.
It's not white anymore. Oh my gosh, there's actually some amount of personalization.
When you launched Google this morning, it put a background image behind there and then invited you to change that background image to something you'd like. Immediately, everyone freaked out, said it was ugly and awful, and it looked like they were stealing from Bing. You're just trying to be Bing.
No, I didn't see that image. I just got the white Google.
I just got the white Google, too. I think they'd already taken it down.
They had a hashtag on Twitter that people were supposed to use to say how great it was and show how they'd personalized it. It was just one complaint after the other. My favorite from Curly: Google.com looks like absolute horse apples. Feels like a Google April Fool's joke, but being July, it makes me sick to my stomach.
Wow.
Abomination was another word that was used multiple times. People were mad. And actually, I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. So I went, I personalized the Google homepage for myself. Beautiful picture of like a vineyard. And when I went to Google, I felt almost seasick. I know this sounds weird, but it felt like vertigo.
Seasick?
This is the weirdest. I cannot explain to you the sensation that I had, but I expected something so iconic and I got something so different that it was, it just... like mentally unsettled, not mentally unsettled me. That's a little dramatic, but it was.
I am now committing myself.
it just was off. It's like, you know how they say they put horror movies in the kitchen because that's the place you're most comfortable. And so when someone's getting stabbed in the kitchen, it's most disturbing to you. It was kind of like that.
They changed the Google logo on the Google site constantly. Pac-Man was up recently. At holidays, they have nice artwork. I mean, there are slight changes that Google has done over the years that nobody really complains about and sometimes get excited about.
Well, Marissa Mayer has confirmed that Google is ending the experiment early due to what she called a bug, which erased a link underneath the search bar on Google.com that explained why Google's normally Spartan homepage had taken on a colorful look, according to Tom Krasit over at CNET. So now when you go to Google.com, you can change the background image. You can still do that, but it doesn't have the... That's why me and Eric are just seeing the white stuff, because they'd already taken it down by then. On to the Financial Times reporting that the U.S. antitrust regulators are planning to investigate Apple's mobile advertising practices. This after Google was very excited that they weren't going to be investigated over mobile advertising practices because the regulators thought Apple provided enough competition. But what Apple did is they went and put in new rules that said anybody can advertise in our apps on our platform unless you also run another mobile advertising, unless you run a mobile phone platform. So that, people are thinking, is targeted specifically at Google, although it also affects Microsoft or anybody else who makes a mobile platform. Now, you can say, like, oh, that's anti-competitive, and that's, I guess, why the regulators are going to look into it. But Steve Jobs actually explained this at All Things D last week and when someone asked him about why they're doing things this way.
We're real naive about this stuff. So one day we read in the paper that a company called Flurry Analytics has detected that we have some new iPhone and other tablet devices that we're using on our campus. We thought, what the hell? And the way that they detected this was they're getting developers to put their software in their apps, and their software is sending out information about the device and about its geolocation and other things back to Flurry. No customer has ever asked about this. It's violating every rule in our privacy policy with our developers. And we went through the roof about this. So we said, no, we're not going to allow this. This is violating our privacy policies, and it's pissing us off that they're publishing data about our new products.
Well, I think that's, that second part is probably more the reason that they reacted the way they did.
Exactly.
But Elliot Van Buskirk in Wired points out that if Apple would allow Google to track user data within ads, Google could see how people interact with advertising elements within the apps, and it would be able to use that information to inform the process of building AdMob. So, to be clear... Ish. Apple has said, Google, you can sell ads in apps on our platform. You just can't collect any user data, which makes selling ads almost useless.
But I wouldn't want to work at the FTC or the Department of Justice right now and have to wade through all of these complex relationships with these companies that have so many products that are intertwined and competitive. It gets messy. This is a mess.
Doesn't it all come down to privacy issues, though, whether or not the consumer has accepted the flow of information from their phone, allowing Google to collect their behavioral data?
Well, that's going to apply to iAd and any advertising platform. We haven't even gotten into that morass of, like, you know, wait a minute, what information are you collecting about
right.
me? That's a whole other concern.
Yeah, but that's what Steve Jobs brought up right there in the video. And what he was saying is, you know, Flurry pissed us off because they're doing this, because they're allowing this data to be collected without having the consumer say it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could get turned into the Wild West. And there was one other factoid that I just wanted to throw out there because I was thinking, gosh, this is such a big fight. What's the deal? Get this. Juniper Research says $250 million spent on mobile ads this year, and that will rise to $32 billion in the next 5 years. So we are talking about a huge, huge revenue opportunity. And the fight now, this is everybody's laying their claim.
I want the money.
It's all follow the money. It's all right. About the money, and that's all I'm going to say. Speaking of the money, this episode is brought to you by Slingbox. Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go on most any portable device. I can have my Doctor Who's all recorded at home, and then I pull up my iPad, and I've got the iPhone app of Slingbox, and I can watch them anytime I should be preparing for TNT upstairs off of my DVR from home. You can do that, too. Go to Best Buy, purchase a Slingbox, bring it home. You hook up your Slingbox to your TV and your internet connection, so it's pretty simple. And then you can watch your TV on your mobile phone or your laptop, wherever you go. You just install the Slingbox software on that device. There's no restrictions. There's no blackouts. You can have, let's say you live in St. Louis, Missouri, and you want to watch the Cardinals game, but you're in Bora Bora, and they don't carry it there. No problem. You got Slingbox. You can watch the Cardinals game.
Hey, World Cup coming up. I mean,
that's right.
Let's say those mobile servers are getting slammed, but you've got the game on at home, huh? You can just fire up the old Sling on your phone browser.
So check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com/twit. Back to the stories. T-Mobile going to get an iPhone, says Shawoo. Yeah.
Well, it's got the right innards. This story is kind of, I mean, I was like, really? This seems, nobody's talking about this. This came out of nowhere. This is an analyst saying T-Mobile's getting the iPhone. And Tom gave me the beatdown and just said, shawoo.
Shawoo is I'm sort of a Shawoo fanboy because he comes up with some crazy analyst talk.
Who is
especially
this
around Apple? You know, he's an analyst, and he's predicted some pretty nutsy stuff in the past, and why wouldn't he predict this now? It grabs headlines, but he
because
thinks
no one's expecting it.
That because everybody thinks it's going to be Verizon.
Yeah,
that's going to be too costly because they have to make a CDMA phone. Whereas T-Mobile, even though they aren't always on the same bandwidth of GSM, it would be easier for T-Mobile to accept the iPhone with the current frequencies and sell it in areas where they have the right frequency.
Right. Which kind of makes sense.
There's a certain internal logic to it.
But it's still limited, and it's probably more limited than Apple would want to be.
I'll put it this way. What Josh Topolsky said on Twit last weekend, I think is more likely when they go non-exclusive, they go all carriers. Because Apple wants to make money off Verizon. They're not going to make a ton of money off T-Mobile, but if they're going to make a CDMA phone, why not open it up to Sprint at the same time, and why not open it up to T-Mobile on the GSM side?
And just today in the UK, they announced their fifth carrier who's got the iPhone, and this is a carrier that's kind of like known, I don't know if it's, I guess it's kind of comparable to T-Mobile, known for getting the cost on hardware way down, so, you know, there's precedent for many multiple carriers.
Curtis B. in the chat room says he thinks they'll wait till LTE to have an iPhone on Verizon. And I think that's probably right, actually. Yeah. That's where, because I think that's enough years down the road that AT&T's agreement for exclusivity is expired. Then Apple has a reason to move and say, oh, you know, we're going to make an LTE phone. AT&T and Verizon are both on LTE. And
we're going
to have that come out. So heartrending as it is, don't expect an iPhone on any other platform anytime soon.
Now, we did talk about T-Mobile yesterday. There was a rumor out that they were going to have on June 19th a Father's Day promotion that all phones in the T-Mobile T-Mobile store were going to be free if you signed up for a family plan. So I contacted T-Mobile and said, what can you tell us about this? There's leaked artwork and a script for a TV commercial on the web. And they said, we cannot confirm or deny, or what did they say? We do not comment on rumors. That was the exact statement.
Oh, yeah. That old saw.
But this is an old friend of mine. I worked with this guy 15 years ago at a TV station up in Seattle. And he said, but if we do have something coming out, you'll be the first to know.
Awesome.
Great.
So all I'm saying is this is absolutely a rumor. But if you're thinking about upgrading your phone on T-Mobile in the next 2 weeks, why not wait? You never know. You might save $100 or $200. So yeah, I'm just saying.
Wait a couple weeks, see if Becky hears anything. And then you know, then
June
go
19th
ahead.
Comes and goes, right. Then go get your phone. You're I was fine. Wrong. Sorry.
Exactly. PC World reporting that some folks took some screenshots of a $199 PlayStation 3 posted on Sony's new 3D website. They're coming out with 3D games tomorrow. And on that same page, for a while, you could purchase a PlayStation 3 for $200, or at least there was one listed.
Yes.
I don't know if you could actually buy it or not, but do you think this was a mistake? Are we going to see a $200 PS3 announced at E3?
It makes good sense. I mean, why not have something that is more affordable? It's within people's price range, maybe have a smaller hard drive.
Because drop the storage, that might happen.
Drop the storage in it, make it a little bit more affordable. Maybe, I don't know about reducing what it can do, though. I mean, probably just storage reductions.
Yeah, I don't think it's terribly likely. Sony doesn't like to drop prices, ever. They're too cash poor.
What was the debut price on this? Wasn't it like 500 clams?
Something around there, a few years back, yeah.
That's a pretty monstrous drop. I mean, I wonder I'd be interested to see what the arc is like in terms of, you know, how that price drop compares to other console drops. That seems like a monster fall.
Chat room is saying it was $599 when it came out.
Yeah, it was $600. Yeah. That's right.
But if they are releasing one with the 3D gaming capability, you know, you've got a higher end and then you drop the low end.
That's just software, though. That didn't really save any money in the manufacturing. But
storage gets cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah, it's
Come
all perception,
on.
Right? Yeah,
I
exactly.
know. Hardware is getting cheaper all the time.
Earlier this week on MacBreak Weekly, I believe, Kiki, you were saying, or who was saying that?
I think I was saying
Eric,
yeah.
Eric, you were saying?
Leo's pick of the week was this James Joyce Ulysses comic book app for the iPad. And now it looks like Apple has banned it.
Yeah, Sarah Weinman at the Daily Finance says that a webcomic adaptation of the book Ulysses has been banned from iPads and iPhones because of a dirty cartoon, because of cartoon nudity, because there is a very tiny squiggle of a line that looks like a package.
Okay, first of all, I think that this whole comic should be banned because it puts a fat older man's body on the genitalia of a 9-year-old, and it's very disturbing. That, and not, you're just, talking about size.
It's just the aesthetic issue here that you're protesting.
There was also a lack of other things that go with those areas, berries, you know, branches. I can't go into full detail, but there was some
the courts of the United States, like back in the 20s,
better than a Ken doll.
Back in the 20s, I think the courts decided that Ulysses was not obscene and it shouldn't be banned. So
that was a text form.
Huh?
I'm not advocating for banning it. I'm just saying that I'm not sure that the precedent stands because that's the text version.
But isn't your imagination always a little bit wilder than you? Anything in print? I mean, I have to
Good
say
point.
That when you read something and you're imagining it in your head, if that imagination and where your imagination can go is not illicit, is not pornography, then how can this comic strip that is...
I don't know about your imagination, Kiki, but mine is absolutely pure.
Mine was not sparked by that image. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's the thing. I just don't think that
image... Sparked.
I don't think that image is obscene. Come on.
No, but it's a precedent issue, and it's a very fine line between wackadoo, strange man jumping naked into water.
Make it a mature app that you have to say you're 17. Put it under the parental controls. Don't ban it for that.
Or just tell the developer that they could just modify it slightly and bring it back in.
No, I don't even think you need to modify it. You're changing the art.
Just kind of fuzz out that
bit.
Make it a little blurry.
All right. It's sad but true. Anakin Skywalker was suffering from borderline personality disorder.
Poor guy.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. It turns out that a study of Star Wars by psychologists has determined that he was borderline personality. UCLA child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. H. Eric Bender is part of this analysis. I mean, okay, first, how much time do you have on your hands as a psychologist that you're assessing Anakin Skywalker?
But check it out. Absence of a father, early separation from his mother, developmental issues.
Murder.
Violent dissociative events such as killing a tribe of Tuscans.
And children.
Impulsivity.
Killing the little children trainees. Oh, that was such a
totally
sad.
Turned him to the dark side.
Overinflated sense of importance.
Yes.
So, what, Depakote and a little Zoloft?
mean, what do we prescribe here?
What do we give this guy?
Man, it would have been a different world if he'd been medicated. One of the greatest periods of my life would have been just erased off the books.
Completely different. I mean, maybe he would have been, you know, nice Vader. I don't know.
Nice Vader instead of Darth.
Go around saving puppies. You know, getting.
It would have been a whole different movie.
I will use
Darth
the
generous.
Force. Yeah, I will take.
Darth the generous.
Use the force to get kittens out of trees.
All right. And finally, an artificial intelligence has been developed that scans the articles from Yahoo Finance and then does a textual analysis of the words therein and has the ability to predict the stock market as well or better than most Wall Street quantitative traders. It's called the Arizona Financial Text System, or AZFin Text. Works by ingesting large quantities of stories along with minute-by-minute stock price data, and then it buys or shorts every stock it believes will move more than 1% of its current price in the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, and it wasn't a statistically insignificant difference. So they tested this against funds that traded in the same securities. So the AI version did 8.5% return, and then Vanguard had a growth and income fund 6.44%. That was the next closest. Then BlackRock, 5.48%. RiverSource, 4.5%. So, I mean, it was at least 2% higher than the next closest fund that traded in the same stock. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and what it's basing itself on are the words that are emotionally charged that might actually influence the behavior of people. So
that
if there
really...
are...
So it's buzz.
Yeah, it's the buzz.
It shows how fickle the stock market valuations are, because it's just based on what people are buzzing about at the time.
It's because we're monkeys, and basically we do what other people, we imitate. And
see
so,
Dr. Kiki Science Hour for more on monkeys.
That's right. Yeah, we do what those people close to us do, or who we trust do. We want to imitate their behavior, and so that's what this goes. We see these articles, you read the articles, negative, negative, negative. I'm going to sell. Positive, positive, positive. Buy, buy, buy.
The five words with the highest negative impact on stock price were hereto, comparable, charge, summit, and green.
Green.
Mm. So if those words were in a story, it was likely that the stock was going to go down. The five highest positive words.
I don't know if this is really, really good for the green show that Sarah and I are going to be launching in July.
Okay, so Tom, if you're planning to launch an IPO soon, you send out a press release that has hereto, comparable, charge, summit, and green.
Yeah, and then ditch it. I'm going to send out an IPO that says, I've planted a seed with this new company, and I'm announcing on the front face of it a smaller and crude version. And then the stock's going to go through the roof.
That's right, because those are the positive words.
It's going to be like SEO for stocks. I like it.
I think crude probably refers to oil, but, you know,
most
you can use it however you want.
Smaller, I don't know. Smaller something.
What's that?
Nanotech.
Dog barking in the background? It's not my dog. No, it's not my dog.
Yeah, it's not. All right, on to the calendar.
Yes.
How are we going to watch the World Cup, Becky?
I thought this would be an interesting. I'm going to try and summarize as quickly as I can while the doorbell rings and the dog barks. What's going on World Cup? So ESPN Classic going to be broadcasting all 64 World Cup matches each day from 6 p.m. to midnight. You want to come back to me? Is that really bugging you, the dog barking?
No, go ahead. The dog's just co-hosting with you.
Don't mind me. I'm going to yell for a second. Boy, come here.
Now we get to meet Becky's dog.
Yes, put the dog on camera.
Uh-oh.
Who let the dog in?
Someone's at the door. I'll be excusing myself in a moment. Satellite radio subscribers can listen to XM Radio. Also, ESPN3.com will air live online simulcasts of all World Cup matches. Univision is going to stream live in Spanish. And 23% of American soccer fans plan to follow the World Cup via their mobile phones, and there are lots of apps for that. So strong recommend on getting that information. And I'll be right back. I have to get rid of these people at the door so they don't ring the doorbell.
Don't let our podcast interrupt you.
No,
go take care. Go take care of the front door. Meanwhile, we'll hear a voicemail. You can call us, 260-TNT-SHOW. That is the number. In fact, if you don't have letters on your dialing device, it's 260-868-7469. And you can send us a file like Dave did at the top of the show with his Ogg Vorbis file. That works. Just send that to TNT at twit.tv. Or if you call 260-TNT-SHOW like Jose did, you can leave us a message. Jose has an explanation of what he thinks about the violent video game research we talked about yesterday.
Hey, Tom and Becky. This is Jose from Jacksonville calling regarding yesterday's show where you guys were talking about the research for aggressive gaming. So basically the research says that if you are a jerk, don't listen to your mother and don't do your homework, and you play video games, you'll be a jerk, won't listen to your mother, and won't do your homework. Versus if you're a nice boy who listens and you play violent video games, you'll still be a nice boy who listens. Sounds like amazing research to me. Love the show.
Yeah, groundbreaking, right?
I think okay, fine, Jose. That's actually pretty hilarious. But what it was saying is if you're a jerk and you can't clean your room or whatever, and you play video games, it'll make you more of a jerk. Whereas if you're nice, it just doesn't have an effect.
Yeah, and that research wasn't really saying anything new except for the fact that it was specifically to do with violent video games. We already know from lots of psychological research that it has to do, your brain is set up in a particular way, and if you have a predisposition towards violent behavior or non-violent, you're probably going to stay that way based on your genetics, based on the environment you've been reared in. An environment and experience has a huge role.
The video games will aggravate a condition that's already there.
Yeah.
Right. But pretty funny, Jose. Thanks for the call. On to the emails. TNT at twit.tv is the email address. Chris wrote in and said, I love your work, but I took issue with the way you reported the iPhone display story yesterday on TNT. I'm a typography nerd and a neuroscientist. Ha ha. So you're in good company with Kiki here.
Great.
So
I will shake my fist at you in his
So I know a bit stead. About this stuff. I felt like I had to do something to correct this because so much work has been done on this topic, as almost everyone is in agreement that 300 dpi at 10 to 12 inches always saturates the retina's ability to discriminate two dots. Everyone in the print industry knows this too, which is why all magazines and laser printers top out at 300 dpi. I really wish you would have checked a second source on this one before jumping to conclusions. We're just passing along the PC World article, but okay. Phil Plate has a very insightful post at discovermagazine.com. And essentially, what Phil's post, the bad astronomy guy, says is if you have perfect eyesight, then at 1 foot away, the iPhone 4's pixels are resolved. The picture will look pixelated. If you have average eyesight, the picture will look just fine. So in a sense,
if you're Superman, it's going to look
good. This is Phil's words here. In a sense, both Jobs and Sonera are correct. At the very worst, you could claim Jobs exaggerated. His claim is not true if you have perfect vision. But for a lot of people, I would even say most people, you'll never tell the difference.
Yeah, and he says that even 20/20 vision is not defined as perfect.
No.
It's one arcman instead of 0.6.
I have 20/10, or I used to. I probably don't anymore.
I have no idea. I just see things.
Yeah. You see dead people?
No. Other things.
So I'm back. Hello.
Yes, we also we got another email that you're up to read.
Yes, and just so you know, you can't make this stuff up. It was someone selling meat door to door.
Ah, they wanted you to go. They wanted you to go baste it.
I've had them come to my house. The meat salesman with their truck, and they throw the slabs of frozen meat down. It's really interesting.
Would you like to buy some meat?
Would you like
you
to
wanna
buy some meat?
No, I'm doing a podcast.
I'm in the middle of a show.
Hello. Okay, so this is an email from what's this guy's name? I'm trying to get it here.
Stian.
He's, and it's long, but it's really good. So bear with me. So in TNT 6, a guy sent an email regarding video calls in 3G networks in South Africa. I work at a cell phone operator in Norway and wanted to point out that the UMTS standard on which AT&T's network is built, video calls are defined by circuit switch service throughout the network, and along with regular voice, fax, SMS, etc. The video and voice is multiplexed onto the same transmission channel, and it's up to the handsets to negotiate quality and the like. A video call would not put load on the packet switching part of the carrier's network. Thus, there should be no problem for the iPhone 4 to perform video calls over the 3G network and talk to other phones with a front-facing camera. However, since Apple have developed an entirely different technology for this, as they are currently transporting the video call using SIP over the packet network, it'll require some kind of media conversion in the operator's network to allow video calls with other handsets, and it will indeed put load on the already strained packet-switched carrier network. Love the show. So, I mean, that's the kind of analysis that is just incredibly helpful because, you know, that it's like, oh, okay, they created their own standard that's built into the phone calling aspect of the iPhone and hadn't really thought about how that would impact. But we do know that Steve said they won't have any calling over cell video calling over cell data networks until at least 2011. So maybe this is why.
Yeah, I love this explanation, and it just makes you wonder why would it be because AT&T would charge too much or be too much in control if they did the video calls over the packet switch or over the multiplexed part of the network, or is it just something where they kind of want to get away from using that and use everything over the internet?
Yeah, or it just builds it into their own functionality and they can, I don't know, who knows? Maybe it makes it more ubiquitous across carriers when they open it up. I have no idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for today. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget to watch Dr. Kiki Science Hour and This Week in Science.
That's right.
And you do a few others, right?
Maxwell's House is on right after this.
All right. If you're watching us live, check out Maxwell's House, or you can check it out on demand as well. Email us tnt@twit.tv or 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. And you can find all of the information about the show at our website, twit.tv/TNT. For Eric, Dr. Kiki, and Becky, I'll see you later.
Bye.